Welcome to our series on social capital. My name is Tristan Claridge, and I'm the director of the Institute for Social Capital. And I'm joined by Lyndon Robison, who is Emeritus Professor of Agricultural and Resource Economics at Michigan State University. Welcome, Lyndon.
Thank you, Tristan, and hello to our audience.
Lyndon and I share a passion for social capital, and we each have a long history of work on the concept. However, our different perspectives, Lyndon from economics and my background in sociology, mean that we can have very interesting and engaging conversations and debate. So in this episode, we'll discuss what does social capital produce? What does it do? And as we've seen from previous episodes, we perhaps can't agree on what social capital actually is, but perhaps we might be able to find some agreement on what it does. So Lyndon, let's start with how you would describe what social capital produces.
So, and I think I would like to begin by sort of making a very declarative statement that we don't do very much, or even very much at all, alone. That whatever we do and do well, we engage with other people. And from an economist perspective, we always harken back to Adam Smith's 1776, The Wealth of Nations, where he describes the increase in productivity of people working together, comparing one person's effort to produce one pin a day alone to 10 people working together producing 48,000. Now, there's been some question if that 48,000 is an accurate number, but the fact that by specializing, we increase productivity is surely taken for granted. But the fact remains that if we specialize and give up producing other things that we need, we must engage others in some kind of exchange to obtain what we need and no longer produce. So whatever social capital produces, it facilitates our ability to exchange and specialize.
And social capital has been seen to facilitate those types of exchanges. But we've talked before about the nature of an arm's length exchange, which is commonly understood in economics as the kind of exchanges that occur within the economy. But does that sort of exchange exist in reality?
If you're asking my opinion, the answer is no, I don't think so. Because once we meet face to face and we have an awareness of each other, the nature of our future exchanges are likely different. So if you have sort of an arm's length theory of exchanges, then what would motivate that would be selfishness that I can gain something in our exchange. And the focus of economics is that what we exchange are primarily commodities. Now, here's an extension of that. Suppose I want to buy an airline ticket and I go to the office and I don't have quite enough money, but I've accumulated frequent flyer miles. And I combine them and say, with my frequent flyer miles and my money, I can complete this exchange. Now, if there were something in our commodity exchanges like frequent flyer miles, and I'll call it a relational good, that I could combine with money to f enable this exchange, then I think we could go a long ways in explaining exchanges that ordinarily can't be explained simply because of selfish commodity advantages. When my son wants to borrow the car when he was a teenager, that's not explained by a commodity exchange. There's some other things and goods being exchanged that are required to fully understand those.
Yeah, and the way in the literature social capital is often understood to act is that it produces, or at least facilitates, cooperation and collective action. So that's very much the idea that it makes working together with other people possible and certainly more likely. But perhaps we could dig into what social capital does by exploring what other forms of capital do to see if we can see the consistency and the logic that exists within the theory of capital to help us to understand what it produces. So, what would be a simple description of what something like physical capital does?
So, well, it enables and facilitates the production of a good. And when we say a good, we mean something that satisfies a need. If whatever it is doesn't satisfy a need, then it's probably not a good. So we see a lot of abandoned capital that it really isn't functioning because it's not meeting a need or not meeting it efficiently. So, if we were to talk about, well, what does social capital produce? And it has to produce a good of some kind of good. And these, then we are forced to examine, well, what are the needs that this good is satisfying? And traditionally in economics, we focus on physical needs, location and heat and food and all of these kinds of things that satisfy physical needs. But that fails to explain a lot of the exchanges that aren't exchanging commodities at all, which leads us to say, are there other needs for which we produce goods that satisfy these needs? And from some of our work, I think we're convinced that we have a need for internal and external validation for belonging and somehow to be connected to the world around us. And that relationship, social capital, produce the goods, call them relational goods, that satisfy these other needs besides commodity needs, that making it a very important resource that has to be studied in addition to, say, physical capital or man-made capital or financial capital focused on commodities.
And as a non-economist, as soon as you start talking about goods, it's foreign to me and the way that I think about the world. But when you explain it in that way, and you talk about how these can be responding to the needs for social and emotional well-being and internal validation, external validation, and belonging, and all that kind of thing, then I can appreciate how they are goods, and you use the term relational goods to describe them. So I think in the end, we're not dissimilar in the way that we think about what social capital does, that I would describe it as the ability to work together. It facilitates working together and cooperation between people. And you perhaps describe it as facilitating the relational goods, particularly. But I think we're probably just about in agreement on what that actually means.
We may be setting new ground, setting new records for economists and sociologists to agree, Tristan.
I think so. When you dig into the deeper meaning of what the terms mean and what's behind it, then I think we more often than not we do find agreement. But I want to talk a bit more about human capital and perhaps natural capital and these other different forms of capital and what they do, because that may also help us to identify the nature of social capital and what it does. And human capital is the skills, the ability, the education, the experience, and it is that ability that humans have to be able to do work, to be able to make use of those skills and abilities that they've acquired. And so it follows the logic of capital as an investment that produces this potential to then do something with it.
So, if I could just follow up on the idea of human capital, most cases there isn't one source of capital, but you have several different kinds of capital producing a good or an outcome. And imagine, for example, a teacher having human capital, skills, knowledge, and is prepared to share those with her students. And if, in addition to those students perceive that this teacher cares about them, is and they're feeling that they're important, that they belong. So you have created an environment where not only information and the products of human capital, but also the relational goods produced by social capital are being combined in the classroom, in the exchanges. What you have is what is analogous to trying to buy an airline ticket with both miles and money, in this case, relational goods and information, and you've created, enabled an exchange that's going to make the whole process more productive than if you were reading information from a television screen, and this was your only source of information, very limited relational goods exchange. So, yes, human capital is an important source of capital. It can be enhanced, its productivity enhanced when combined with social capital. And I think, by and large, that was the point that James Coleman was trying to make.
And certainly one way that social capital has been described in the literature is that it facilitates the mobilization of resources. Now, resources is often not particularly well defined, but that is one way of thinking about what social capital does, is that it facilitates the flow of information or skills or abilities, which perhaps is human capital. It facilitates the mobilization of physical capital by loaning and giving and sharing types of actions between individuals. And so that is a useful way to think about what social capital does, as mobilizing these other forms of capital. But as you say, that's what all forms of capital really do, is they mobilize these other forms of capital. They work together. They rarely work alone.
Yeah, I completely agree, Kristen. And for that reason, I think we're finding new applications to social capital, that how it can mobilize resources within a community or other settings, team building and businesses. We're saying, well, if you include the resources produced by social capital into whatever else is being produced, there is a possibility to increase efficiency in production and the productive results from those activities than if we just describe them working alone. So when we talk about commodities, simply goods valued for their physical properties, food, clothing, fuels, and so on. But if those get embedded with relational goods and they have value in addition to that, so you have a sweater, but you have a logo or some other brand that adds value to it, now you're not just trading commodities, but you're kind of trading embedded relational goods. And then the processes that we do that need to be examined more carefully. You talk about social acts, and I've come to appreciate that phrase because when we talk about exchanges, it's much more than going to the store, putting money down and receiving a product. These social acts can be a wide range of activities, shaking hands, a greeting, a lot of things that we typically don't associate with an exchange. But I think you would say those are legitimate ways of exchanging between people.
Yeah, I would. And I wanted to explore also in the literature, we see connections being made between social capital and things like recycling behaviors or personal health related actions, or a variety of other claimed outcomes of social capital that don't necessarily fit with what we've been talking about, as the mobilization of resources or other forms of capital, or as the potential for collective action and cooperation, or in fact, even as the potential for exchange of relational goods. So it'd be good to examine like what types of these social actions are outcomes of social capital and which ones aren't. And starting with the ones that are most obviously are an outcome is cooperation and collective action, literally when we work together. But then we've got cooperation also can mean just simply accommodating other people's needs, where we're not aiming to work together, but we're going to hold a door open for somebody. We're going to give them some directions. We're not working towards the same goals, but we're going to accommodate other people's needs. And then we can go further than that, and we can look at actions that relate to others, but aren't necessarily even affected. They affect others, but then we're not interacting directly with them on it. So this might be actions that deplete a common property resource or something like that. This is less likely that these are outcomes of social capital directly, and certainly in the way that we've talked about it. And then you've got those other actions that are purely influenced by others. Recycling behavior isn't an exchange. It isn't directly working with others. It isn't any of the things I mentioned before. It's purely coming down to that level of being influenced by others. And I think that at that level, it's perhaps difficult to justify that that is an outcome of social capital directly, at least. What do you think about this?
So years and years ago, an investigative reporter had a lead, and the lead's advice was follow the money and you'll get the important clue. I think if there were a similar phrase in our study of social capital and what it does, it would be follow the need. So what is the need? Because that need will drive the production and the exchange of goods. We did a study of why people submitted to medical screens. And we tried to describe and measure the relative importance of needs that were being satisfied by conducting or submitting to a medical screen. And you can imagine that if you offered someone two colonoscopies for the price of one, it probably wouldn't change the demand very much. But when people described the benefit of having their loved ones not worry or feeling like it was the right thing to do, and that was the need that was being focused, you could gain a much better appreciation for why people were there in the waiting room waiting for this medical procedure. So I think along, if there is some advice, it's follow the need. What is the need that this social act is likely to satisfy? And in the case of why people recycle, we have done studies measuring the relative importance of why people recycle. And they're not commodity needs. There's no financial need that's being satisfied by recycle. But people do say that I feel better about myself when I do it. I feel better about the world I'm leaving for my ancestors or children or so on. There are important needs being satisfied by recycling efforts. They're different than the need being satisfied by hunting for the cheapest price per gasoline or where do I get my haircut? So I think follow the need is going to help us a lot as we try and identify the role that social capital has in the production of relational goods.
And so I agree, and I think that approach is really useful. But what it's highlighted is that simply saying that social capital facilitates cooperation and collective action is incomplete. That there are other things that it does beyond purely facilitating people working together or even accommodating other people's needs, that it can respond to our own needs for those social emotional connections. So I think it really helps that process then to explore what it is, and by doing so, we can then have a much better understanding of the processes that actually produce social capital. It improves our understanding of the concept.
I couldn't agree more. I think when we cooperate, when we join in collective action, when we volunteer, just a number of activities that we can't explain by simply, well, what are you getting paid for? The need is something different than that, and it leads me to cooperate, engage in community projects, recycle, and so again, those needs are going to drive a lot of activity that otherwise we say it doesn't quite make sense.
Yeah, this has been really useful discussion. I really appreciate talking with you, Lyndon, as always. That's all we've got time for in this episode. Look forward to speaking with you in the next one.
Look forward to it. Thank you, Tristan.